Calcio Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcio Land Podcast. So today we are going to essentially recap the transfer window so far in Serie A and look a little bit to the future. Transfers are going to go on till October 5th, so I figured this was a good time to take stock of everything that happened. So at the top, Alex and I will talk about the two Scudetto contenders, see how much the distance between Juve and Inter may have changed this summer based on their summer moves. We'll go over some hot transfer topics, some recent transfer news, and I'll name some winners and losers for the first half of the transfer window. And to help us put a bow around everything, we have an interview available to all our friend Enrico Passarella. We talked about the main storylines, and he also did a bonus part of the interview, which will be available for patrons only. And of course, we have a part of the podcast for them as well today. So I'm joined by our dear friend, producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. So Alex, since we're recapping transfer window so far, I wanted to take stock of Juve and Inter, which look like the two strongest teams and the two main Scudetto contenders. So last season, Juve finished just 1 point above Inter. Who knows if had the season played out normally without the pandemic, what the distance would have been, but it was close. So let me recap what they've done so far and kind of tell me where you think they're at, how you rank them, who you think's the favorite for the Scudetto next season. So Juve, let's talk about the players they lost. Pjanic and Matuidi are gone. Higuain and Khedira are likely next. They add Arthur as part of the Pjanic deal. They add McKinney. We've talked a lot about him. And they added Kulusevski. I'm also going to give them, as a main striker, it really comes down to that it's going to come down between one of Suarez and Dzeko. So that's Juve so far. Let's flip to Inter. They've added Hakimi, Kolarov, and we're going to give him Vidal, too, because that's very close now. No big player departures at Inter quite yet. They cashed in on Icardi. Biraghi is back at Fiorentina. So when you look at these moves, Alex, in your opinion, who has reinforced more? Does this change the balance of power in Serie A?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question, David. But, you know, I actually want to say Juve is more improved because I've been talking about this with actually somebody I talk about all types of football with, but he actually is a Juve fan and he's a very cynical Juve fan. So I appreciate when he's positive and I'm not just basing it off of his opinion, but he's been saying, and you've said this too, like Kulusevski was acquired so long ago by Juve that he's become the forgotten man. And I love that move, and I don't know as much about him as others do, but you know how I feel about in-league moves. He obviously has a lot of potential, but can come in and just be a spark right away. Maybe a little bit of an X factor gives them something that they really didn't have. So he's a huge reason why I say that. I think Arthur's a good midfielder. Like, people saw how I reacted, David, after that deal was made. I know that there were financial reasons as to why that deal was made, but you know that you couldn't reel me in on that one. You could give me all the financial reasons there are, but I was like, wow, what a deal for Juve. And then even Weston McKennie, like, once again, I think he's going to be a firecracker for Juve, and maybe he's not going to be one of their most prominent players, but those are good additions. Like, I've actually been thinking about Juve's additions a lot more lately, and I really think they make sense. Like, when you're a big team like that, sure, you always want to try and acquire the big players as well. And David, you've been talking about for quite some time that since they got Ronaldo, they're now in play for big players. And we saw that with De Ligt. Like, they're now that team that is in play for the biggest of players. Sure. But you don't always need to build your team like that, and you can't force the market. And I feel like Juve haven't forced the market at all, and they usually don't. They're usually very good at it. And those signings are really good. Like, I've talked about Inter signings a lot and how Hakimi really fits Antonio Conte, and I'm sure Kolarov does too, and Vidal, whatever he gives, and he's still always kind of a unique player to have in your team. But Those Juve ones are a little bit more impactful for me based on how they complement the side. Like, those Inter ones are good ones, and Hakimi could be a big player for Conte, but that one has to be a heavy, heavy performer, the Hakimi one. It's not necessarily a compliment. Like, I still need to see how that one plays out. And Kolarov and Vidal just don't get me as excited as Artur and maybe McKinney. So Kulusevski is kind of the prize of all of that, in my opinion, based on the contrast he already has to the Juve squad, but what he can grow to. No disrespect to Hakimi. And then if they're to add one between Suarez or Dzeko, I mean, I would believe that those players would do well at Juve. So all these players I've talked about that Juve have got or could get, I think would do well in their side. So it really says less about me not loving what Inter has done, because I do. I've commended them a lot. I would have commended them a lot more had they got Tonali as well. But the Juve ones I just really like. And once again, Kulusevski, he was acquired so long ago. Some people have forgotten, but I think that's a great, great signing. So I'll say Juve. Those ones have impressed me more. What about you, David?
Yeah, and I'm glad we did this exercise because, you know, I really believe in the momentum with storylines and whatnot. And I think it becomes easy to kind of get, swept away by a storyline and then kind of putting teams in a category. And then, you know, you take a moment and you take stock and you're like, oh, maybe I look at this a little bit differently. And let's be honest, there's been a lot of positive momentum with Inter. I think it's because of their run in the Europa League for good reason. Hakimi, great, great signing. I think maybe out of all the ones we mentioned between the two teams, maybe the most impressive, I think the most accomplished by Artur's close. But you could say Hakimi is definitely the sexy signing out of this. But you look at Juve and it does look really maybe better than you thought. Now, a lot of people would say their midfield was weak to begin with, and you can make a case maybe Pjanic and Matuidi were maybe two out of the three, maybe two out of the four best midfielders. So then you got to say, you know, how are you replacing them? Artur, McKinney, a year of Bentancur being better probably. Rabiot, who came on. So interesting there. I agree, Kulusevski is a big X factor. And I think, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how he fits in, especially because it looks like they're bringing in another striker. And look, Suarez or Dzeko, and I'm going on the assumption one of the two arrives, that's a substantial improvement to me over Higuain, because they're essentially replacing, one of them is replacing Higuain. McKinney is essentially replacing Matuidi. I don't think he'll play nearly as much, but he kind of has that role. Arthur, not exactly the same player as Pjanic, but he'll replace those minutes. So that looks pretty good to me. I think here, though, the big X factor between the two teams is really the coaches. We don't know what Pirlo is going to bring. We know what Conte is going to bring in, good and bad, right? I mean, we know as a coach, he'll do really well, but as an agitator off the pitch, someone is going to light a fire under the team. That could also backfire, especially with Inter making it clear that they're not going to spend that much the rest of the way. So interesting exercise. I think you could make a case between the two that distance of 1 point talent-wise maybe has increased for Juve, assuming one between Suarez and Dzeko comes in, because that to me is a huge upgrade over Higuain. But the coaching one to me really is the big X factor. So I'm going to say, if you put a gun to my head, I'm going to put Inter as a slight favorite for the Scudetto as the team are constructed here. But it really comes down to coaching. But I'm glad we kind of looked at it this way, just looking at the players, because maybe there's more positive momentum out there for Inter than is reflected in the moves. But now let's get to some more recent transfer topics. Let's talk about some hot transfer topics from the past few days. Which ones are we going to cover today, Alex?
All right, David. I always love when we talk about this guy or this agent. Two guys in the question. What do you make of the reports Mino Raiola is asking for $10 million a season for Donnarumma?
Yeah, and I know a few people were asking me about Donnarumma and Chelsea. I just didn't think there was the appetite at Chelsea for spending a ton on a keeper again after Kepa, and it sounds like they found someone else. But yeah, Donnarumma is an interesting situation, has a 1 year left on his contract. Raiola is asking for a huge salary. Now, granted, this report of 10 million isn't on Di Marzio's side. I've read it on other people. Let's just talk about it as if it were true. And I'm sure Raiola is asking for a lot. For me, and I've said it for a long time, the reason there weren't these huge offers for Donnarumma is exactly for this reason. When you give someone who's 19 years old a 6 million net contract, making him already the highest paid keeper in Serie A at the age of 19, when he has an aggressive agent like Raiola, you're going to find yourself in this situation that every time the contract comes close to being expired, he's going to ask for a ton of money. And look, on paper, does Donnarumma deserve to ask a huge wage? In my opinion, absolutely yes. Seamlessly became the new keeper on the Azzurri, replaced Buffon, something I think we absolutely take for granted, but is a big deal. I think he's been outstanding for Milan. But the question is, Milan in this situation, and you could, some people would look as a keeper as kind of a luxury, especially at these numbers. Can they afford him there at that price? Is he worth it to them? I don't know. It's a tough question. I'm very curious to see how this plays out. We know Donnarumma himself wants to stay at Milan, especially now that things are looking up at Milan compared to years past. I'm very curious to see how this situation happens. But what do I make of him asking so much? That the original sin was giving him 6 million when his contract was expiring last time.
Interesting. All right, David, should we consider Lazio the favorites for Kumbula?
I would say yes. And, you know, because of one of my saying that until the status quo changes, I'm going with the status quo. And I think Kumbula to me looks eerily like the Tonali deal 2.0. Inter essentially had Kumbula reserved for a while. But until there's a domino effect with the Skriniar deal and maybe another center back, which we'll get to later in the show, potentially leaving at Inter, I'm not sure they're going to move forward with Kumbula. Also, Kumbula is going to be expensive. So I think this is a great opportunity for Lazio to swoop in and sign a player that can really make a big difference. The other reason why I say that is there's buzz that Acerbi isn't going to extend his contract. Recently changed agents, went with Pastorello. He's not too happy that Immobile and Luis Alberto got big extensions with substantial raises. It doesn't sound like he's getting the same treatment. So I think it's even more important for Lazio to sign Kumbula. And to me, Lazio is interesting, kind of like we were doing the exercise at the top. Sometimes perception, because of storylines out there, maybe clouds our judgment. When you look at the players that Lazio actually added, they look pretty good. Muriqi, the rise from Fenerbahce, done deal. They added Peperina, leadership. They needed a good backup keeper. Strakosha wasn't as good as he was in the past. They bring Fares in from Spal, who can rotate on the left. So you look at Lazio, they have already improved their depth, and Kumbula could really be the sexy signing.
Okay. All right, David. Do you see Roma as a legit landing spot for Memphis Depay?
Yeah, so the next two are going to be some random transfers, I think, like many. I was surprised when Lyon president Aulas, who is known for making a crazy statement here and there, said that it's not just Barca, but Roma was actually in the mix for Depay. Maybe he's been reading all the transfer rumors on Zeko potentially leaving and whatnot. But Roma are not in the mix, as far as I know. He's very likely to go to Barcelona. Interestingly, it doesn't look like Lautaro Martinez will go to Barca. Inter is taking him off the market. And Inter now can really put their money where their mouth is by saying, okay, the deadline for the exit clause expired. We want the full exit clause still to sell. And then it's up to them to decide if they want to move him or not. So with Lautaro staying put at Inter, Depay to Barca looks quite likely, and Umtiti could be heading to Lyon. What do you think about Depay to Barca? Are you pretty intrigued by that one, Alex?
No, because Depay has so is so much talent, but Depay, and listen, this is not me saying I know him, but Depay has never been profiled as the perfect dressing room guy. And I'm not saying he'd go to Barca and be this horrible dressing room guy. But David, doesn't he just give you the vibe of the personality Barcelona, who are currently a mess, don't need? Unless yes, he's just going to go out there and against three-fourths of La Liga, rip them up and score two goals a game or one goal, two assists, and at least help them against crap teams. I guess that would help because some of their players they've paid for don't even do that for them. But still, come on. If you were to tell me a year from now that it didn't work out with Depay in Barcelona, would I be surprised? Not at all. Not at all. Barcelona are a mess. So, no. I absolutely don't really get too intrigued or excited by it. Well, I'm not a Barca fan, so actually I'm very intrigued by it. They should do it. They should do it. So, whatever. Yeah. All right, David. So, let's move on to this one. This team is now near and dear to my heart because we're getting their goalkeeper. But could Rennes really sign Godin?
Yeah, this is another super random transfer. I have a very hard time seeing Rennes paying Godin's wages, especially after Bosman deal to Inter. The other thing is Godin actually really came on. I thought he played quite well at the end of the season. Took a while to get used to Conte's defense. He adapted certainly better than Skriniar. I don't see it happening. But look, if Inter makes a big plusvalenza on Godin, and actually it probably wouldn't be that big because at his age, they probably couldn't get a big transfer fee. It would be more saving his salary. Maybe they go for Kumbula. But interesting. Yeah, Rennes have the money from the goalkeeper. I guess they're going to sell to Chelsea. But I don't see Godin just because the wages look really astronomical to me.
Okay. All right, David, last one of this segment. One of my favorite players. Where could Davide Zappacosta play next?
Yeah, so Atalanta has been literally linked to every Roma right back. First, there was Florenzi, and maybe he becomes an option. Karsdorp, which we almost gave as a done deal here on the podcast, and now there seems to be less momentum for Karsdorp to Atalanta. And the most recent one is Zappacosta, which honestly would be pretty intriguing as Castagne's replacement there. So let's see if Chelsea can get rid of him. I would imagine a loan. Keep in mind, Chelsea and Atalanta have done deals with Pasalic before. I could see this one happening. I definitely expect Zappacosta in Serie A on some team. He had also been linked to Fiorentina previously. So that's our hot transfer topics for the day.
All right, David. Well, we haven't done winners and losers for a little while because there hasn't actually been football, but we really always do this. We like to do winners and losers for the transfer window, but obviously it's not over. So let's do winners and losers for the first half of the transfer window. And like we always do, David, let's start with the winners.
Yeah, excellent. This will be a good way again to recap where we're at so far. I think the biggest winner so far has to be Paolo Maldini. And I think he wins the big war of words with Ragnic. Him and Ragnic had a little back and forth in the media in previous months. Then Maldini stays. Ragnic does not come to Milan. Pioli and Maldini stay on board. Maldini's had a very good window. Gets Tonali, and I think taking him away from Inter makes it even nicer and a big deal. If Tonali ends up being a very good or great player at Milan, that's going to be a deal that Maldini is going to be remembered for because he was so heavily linked to Inter. The other thing, too, is Maldini has been able to get rid of some of the big contracts and the players, you know, excess, not part of the squad. I ask Juve how hard that is. That's been really rather good for Milan as well. So I think Maldini is the big winner. I think he's definitely slowly becoming a very good director. And I think the fact that he's such a central figure in this part of Milan's history is a big positive. So kudos to him for making the most of his opportunity. And then another winner is Maldini's former manager, and you could say his only big mistake is Milan, and Marco Giampaolo. And the reason I put him as a winner is at Torino, they brought in a lot of players that he's familiar with, and they're redesigning the team to fit his mold. If you remember last season, Torino was one of the teams that went with continuity, kept the squad together, and it didn't work out, unlike Lazio. This summer, Torino have been quite active. They got two wings back, Vojvoda, who was linked to Atalanta, Ricardo Rodriguez, who Giampaolo had at Milan. Linetti, very underrated midfielder, in my opinion, from Sampdoria that Giampaolo already managed. So nice moves there. They are also linked to some other former Giampaolo players, Lucas Torreira, we had at Sampdoria, Biglia from Milan as well. So I like what Torino have done. They've really kind of building the team for Giampaolo. Let's see if he makes the most of it. Sounds like Belotti is almost certainly staying. There's a lot of buzz on Simone Verdi having a comeback season. He was a big disappointment last year. We know Giampaolo likes playing with the trequartista. This could be a very important season for Verdi. Those of you who play Fantacalcio, I think a Verdi is a nice, you know, sleeper for your league this season. Then next up, we have Atalanta, who have operated really well. Even two players that they, Pasalic, who they buy outright from Chelsea, Pessina. Let's see if they keep him or if he becomes a plus Valencia. He's been linked to Milan. Pessina, arrived from Verona, could be a nice player for Atalanta. Miranchuk, who is going to be the new backup to Ilicic. He's injured now, but is a highly rated new addition that came in. Ilicic is training again with the team. That in and of itself makes him winner. And then the Romero signing. We talked a lot about it. Now, I don't think it really moves the needle a ton for Atalanta, but I will say this definitely fits the mold of a Gasperini defender. Then we have Cagliari. I like what they've done. I'm not crazy about hiring Di Francesco for a team kind of in the upper level of the relegation race. But player-wise, they've done pretty well. For the third window in a row, they sign an exciting midfielder. They bring in Marin from Ajax. They get Zappa, right wing back from Pescara, highly rated in Serie B. They are close to getting Fazio from Roma. And it sounds like they'll probably keep Nainggolan. So Cagliari having a nice transfer window. We talked about Juve. I know when we talk about Zeke or Suarez arriving, it sounds, wow. Didn't Agnelli say they wanted a younger team with lower wages? Yeah, but on the other hand, they also added McKinney, Kulusevski, Arthur. He has big wages, but he is a younger player. So overall, they are bringing the age of the squad down. And of the newly promoted teams, we have Benevento, who have operated very well. They were the strongest team already to begin with. They add Glick, who used to play for Torino, comes back to Serie A from Monaco. They add Lapadula and Caprari, two strikers who are comfortable in the race to avoid relegation. They're building a nice little squad for Inzaghi. So those are our winners of the first half of the transfer window.
Okay, well, congrats to them. And I don't have much good to say to the next group. But David, who are our losers?
Yeah, so let's start with Udinese. They lost two starters already, important starters, in Sima, left back, and Fofana, who was sold to Lille for $10 million, which didn't sound like a great return. I thought Fofana played really well in the second half of the season. You would have figured there would have been a bigger market for him in Serie A, and then they'll almost certainly lose Rodrigo De Paul. So Udinese, definitely a team to be concerned with in the race to avoid relegation. And then Roma, I hate to pick on them. We're recording this the day after Zaniolo tore his ACL again. I had them as losers, not because of that, but just because of the sale of the club. They are off to a slow start to the summer transfer window. Granted, they did sign Pedro, but there is some uncertainty with Zeko, and we have to see how the rest of the team looks. They have yet to complete the deal for Smalling, and I think it is pretty important that they bring him back. And then we have another loser, Verona, who I'm cautiously optimistic that they'll be able to replace all these guys, but they lost a lot. So they lost Ramani and Amrabat in the January window. They finished the season with them. They'll likely lose Kumbula, and then they've already lost Pessina back at Atalanta, and Verre, another player they had on loan. So a lot of talent left the squad. At least they kept Juric, the manager, which was important. But you got to wonder if Juric was better off leaving, because Verona's another team that's going to struggle in the race to avoid relegation. And then I have one more. I put Alex Meret, goalkeeper for Napoli. There's still some uncertainty on where he'll play. There was some buzz on potentially going to Torino in exchange for Sirigu, which would have been an intriguing move. There's some talk he could go to Roma if Paul Lopez is sold. So let's see what happens with Nere. So before we get to Enrico Passarella, which is available to all, we're going to do a segment for our patrons. If you enjoy Calcioland, as always, I recommend becoming a patron. You'll hear longer versions of the podcast. We do bonus segment every episode. There'll be the second part of the interview with Enrico Passarella just for patrons tomorrow. And we have at least two weekly articles a week. And we make a big monthly donation to a great nonprofit in Italy, the Insuperabili, which run calcio camps for kids with disabilities. They're reopening today, so in bocca al lupo to all the kids who are training. I'm very excited to be joined by my very good friend Enrico Passarella. We had talked to him not that long ago. We had talked about the storylines on the transfer window back then. Enrico has a big passion for transfers, as I do, so I figured we'd check back in, look at the big storylines, and then look a little bit to the future and pick the teams that should be the most interesting the rest of the way. So, Enrico, always a pleasure to chat with you. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Hi, David, and thank you for the invitation in this interesting time for Serie A.
Absolutely. So let's start with the big move from last week. And people are going to hear this episode on Tuesday. And I think the medicals and all the official stuff should be happening right around this time. And this is Tonali, who looked like a promesso sposo to Inter and ends up all set to go to Milan. So what do you make about this acquisition? Also, when you look at the rest of Milan's midfield, how do you think he'll fit in? And in general, how much of an impact do you think Tonali can make on Milan?
Yeah, I'm a little surprised because they have a pretty similar player in Bennacer, so I didn't believe that they would be pursuing Tonali this strongly, but instead they really went for it, taking advantage of the delay in the talks between Brescia and Inter. Obviously, it fits the overall philosophy of the club right now, that seems to be going after young players that can grow over the next few years. Certainly, Bennacer and Tonali can play together in a modern midfield. Maybe the two of them. Maybe you had one physical player last year. They played so well with Frankie Kessié in a 4-3-3-1 tactic. They reached an ideal balance between Kessié and Bennacer. So we'll see whether Tonali will manage to unseat Kessié, or if simply the three of them and also maybe Timoré, Bakayoko, or another midfielder with similar traits will join. Certainly Milan needed other midfielders, but I'm a little surprised they went for the big one, so to speak, because they grabbed one of the best prospects, even though they had a fairly similar player. And maybe I suspect, also considering how Inter didn't really go all-in, and neither did the Juventus, I suspect maybe teams do not seem as ready as we think to come in and take over at a bigger role. Now, maybe they believe he'll need 1 or 2 years to make a really big impact.
Yeah, that definitely sounds right. I think especially for Inter, that is the case. Remains to be seen because they gave up on Zaniolo too. So let's see if this one comes back to bite them. So let's stay. Speaking of Inter, Kolarov is set to arrive. So I want to ask you this. Obviously, the wing back role in Conte's system is very demanding. Do you think Kolarov can realistically be a starter, maybe a co-starter? Like, how often do you think he can play in that role? And in general, how do you see his fit at Inter? Definitely fits more the mold of experienced veteran players as opposed to buying an up-and-comer from a provinciale.
Yeah, as you said, probably a co-starter. They have Ashley Young in that position that is a similar age, but was pretty effective when he joined from Manchester United. So probably the two will alternate almost scientifically because it is a demanding role. As you said, they are both at an advanced age, even though they are pretty good players. Some would say even great ones in case of a Kolarov because of his playmaking abilities and his shooting. And also, I think maybe when he doesn't start, he can really be a devastating weapon off the bench due to him for 50 minutes against tired defenses. It's really almost a regista down the left flank. Besides being a great leader and very dangerous on free kicks. So they get a really, really strong weapon for relatively cheap, which seems to be a common theme across all transfer market strategies in Serie A. And so even though maybe it will be for only one or two seasons, it is a quality reinforcement. And I believe it will have a big impact at Inter.
Absolutely. Let's talk about Napoli next. So Napoli have made a lot of moves so far, but there's this big domino effect potentially with Koulibaly leaving. Do you think Napoli, say Koulibaly is sold to Manchester City or really any club, but Manchester City seems the only one taking concrete steps, do you think they can still finish in the top four?
Yeah, I think so, because if you look at it since Gattuso took over, basically they have been a top four team, obviously notwithstanding the fact they had so much ground to cover, so they didn't manage to enter, but in that stretch they were, and that was even though Koulibaly wasn't really great down the stretch in the final few months. Sometimes he also missed a lot of time. So given the fact that they have a very capable defensive mind at the helm, like Gattuso, I think his system can work even if should Koulibaly be replaced by a lesser player, because he puts so much care in so much focus on that area of the game, and they will be able to make up for his absence, for his departure with our collective effort. And probably the fortunes of Napoli will be determined more by what the other teams do, obviously they need at least one to slip and then yep. The other contenders if they will be able to make the leap like Milan or Roma, if they will concretely fight for the top four, and also on how much their offensive phase will work. There is a lot of excitement for Osimhen, and I think it is well warranted. So I think obviously it would be a big loss, but they can make up for it, make it so it won't impact and won't damage their chances too dramatically.
Yeah, I agree with you because Koulibaly wasn't great last season. They have, you know, Manolas, Ramani, Maksimovic, who played well last season. You look at the other teams, you know, other than Juve and Inter, are the other defenses definitely much better than Napoli without Koulibaly? I think that's definitely debatable. So I agree with you there. Speaking of the team, one team that could slip out of the top four, we have Atalanta, who signed Romero, who arrives from Juve on a 2-year loan deal. Quite a few deals between Juve and Atalanta this summer. But let's stay on Romero in and of itself. Do you think he's an upgrade on what Atalanta had at center back?
I would say that technically not, because I don't think he comes in and is a day one starter. But he certainly has more talent compared to when Berardi City and maybe also Jose Palomino joined. So the coaching staff has a lot more to work with compared to where they started. With other center backs, and we know he needs to grow. He needs to be reined in a little bit physically, because sometimes he can get overzealous. He can get a little too much foul prone. But his style, his aggressive style, is perfect with what Gasperini demands. And I wouldn't be surprised if at the end of the upcoming season he was not only a regular, but also be considered a difference maker in the back.
Okay, yeah, interesting. Yeah, I agree with you that he definitely is the style of center back that Gasperini likes. But yeah, time will tell if he's, though, an upgrade on what they have. So let's go to Juve. We're recording this Monday. People will hear this on Tuesday. There's a lot of strikers linked to Juve. Right now, Luis Suarez, probably the one with the most likelihood to arrive. There's also Dzeko. We've heard of Cavani. We've heard of Milik and Lacazette, maybe not as much recently. When you look at all these players linked to Juve, which one do you think would be the best fit on the team?
In my mind, Dzeko would be the ideal fit because of his physicality, because of his leadership, his class. Obviously, he can score enough to carry the attack in case Ronaldo isn't there. And he's also a perfect second fiddle for Ronaldo, but he has the added bonus that he is already familiar with the Serie A. But I think that the level of players they are pursuing is pretty high, and you at this point it is down to nitpicking, and they wouldn't go wrong with Suarez, with the most prolific out of the bunch, and in the end scoring is the most important part of the game for a striker. So even though probably Dzeko would fit in a little better stylistically, I think Suarez would still be an excellent choice.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued by the idea of Suarez joining Juve. I mean, it could really backfire too, but it would be pretty fascinating. I agree, Dzeko's probably the safest choice with the familiarity to the Serie A being a factor. So I want to ask you about a player that I've been asked a lot recently, and this is Rodrigo De Paul. I know you're a fan. He's been excellent at Udinese, has become a regular on Argentina. Are you surprised that he's mainly linked to Leeds? Are you surprised that a top Serie A team didn't make him a priority, or that we're not seeing him linked to other teams, but specifically Serie A? Do you think he would have been a good fit on some of the top teams in Italy?
Yeah, I would have been a good fit, but I'm not super surprised because, first of all, he's pretty pricey, and that excludes a number of teams. And then if you look at the top teams, they have pretty much all have a similar player in the roster. Inter has Eriksen, Asensi, Lazio has Luis Alberto, Napoli has Fabian Ruiz and Zielinski. And then if we consider him an offensive-minded box-to-box, Roma and Milan do not really have that role in their current system. So probably they see the price and they think it is not really worth when they have some very good players in the same position, and so they have been scared away by his price tag. Obviously, out to Juventus that could probably use him, but I don't think they are in position to make an investment, considering that Sami Khedira, Aaron Ramsey, Douglas Costa are still on the roster. So until they are able to cash in on at least one, also numerically, because the roster cannot be infinite. They're probably out of the race. And the wild card, I think, could be Atalanta, but only if Alejandro Gomez leaves. There is some chatter the last few days about strong offers from Al-Nassr, and a little bit skeptical, but that would be a very good fit, but I don't see Papu leaving.
Interesting. Okay, so let's go to the newly promoted teams. You are a big expert on Serie B as well. So let me ask you this. Is there the potential for any of the newly promoted team to repeat what Hellas Verona did, or maybe even just get a salvezza tranquilla, avoiding relegation without too much heartache? Is there a team that you think fits that bill?
Well, doing the same as Verona is a big ask, but I think Benevento can gun for a mid table position. They were a fantastic defensive team last season, and they already had a lot of Serie A experience in the roster there, and they are adding in the last few weeks. And that is a proven formula. Also, they seem to be thinking big. So even if they don't manage to get very far, at least they would be able to achieve to avoid the relegation. While probably Spezia and Crotone, I put them at a similar level, and they will be fighting for the lives pretty much all year long. I'm a little more intrigued by Spezia squad, which is a little bit younger, and I'm curious to see whether their players can grow together in Serie A. They have been together for a while, and they have a very good coach in Vincenzo Italiano. But yep. On the other hand, Crotone have a pair of difference makers that Spezia and not even Benevento probably have in their striker, CB, and their classy midfielder, Ahmad Ben Ali, that and sometimes they're having a pair of reference points, and especially a prolific center forward can go a long way in the fight to avoid relegation.
Absolutely. Okay. So I'm going to put you on the spot. It's a little early. We really haven't had much preseason at all. So maybe it's a little early, but last year you were really prophetic with Kulusevski being the breakout player in Serie A. So I'm going to let you hedge your bets. You can pick three players that you think have the potential to maybe having somewhat of a similar season, although Kulusevski is really a big ass, kind of like Hellas Verona. But which three players do you think have a chance to break out?
Well, I will give you one per each position. In the defense, I would say Marco Settin was joining the Verona. He comes from Roma, but didn't get to play a lot there. He's currently nursing a pretty tricky injury, but if he manages to get healthy before the start of the season, he could be a really, really interesting player in their scheme, in their very aggressive defensive scheme. From what I saw, he can move around, so it could be a nice replacement for one of those players that have departure. In the midfield, I would say from Spezia, Giulio Maggiore, a very, very modern midfielder, pretty technical, pretty dynamic, big motor, is the best youngster they have at Spezia, and I think he could confirm his level of performances in Serie A 2. And with the striker, I would go with a Prima Colley, who's about to leave Atalanta to move to Parma. Obviously, it is the same move of Kulusevski, and he scored a lot in Primavera. He played a little at the end of the season two, very pacey striker. And but this season Parma has Liverani, so they will be playing a much more offensive-minded style, and I'm curious to see whether Colley will live up to the hype.
Yeah, just quickly off tangent, I wanted to ask you this. What did you make of Cagliari going for Di Francesco and Parma going for Liverani? If you had to pick one of those two moves, which one do you think is going to work out better?
I think probably Liverani, because Di Francesco comes off a negative experience at Sampdoria. And I don't know if he's really a coach cut out for these zones of the standing. To me, it seems more like a one who is more suited for the upper part, while Liverani can bring out the most out of his squad, and he starts with a better one in Parma than the other Lecce. Also is a little bit more malleable than Di Francesco, while Cagliari will have to do a lot, I think, in the transfer market to fit what the coach is asking. So I think also considering the ambitions of the club, Liverani is more likely to be successful.
Yeah, I agree with you. I actually think Cagliari should have hired Liverani.